Friesel. Wilbek scores against his old club.
Thank you for listening, thank you for downloading, and welcome to the Clock and Talk. This week we have Tony. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks, yourself?
Yeah, good, mate, good. Savvy, how are you going, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How good. About you?
Yeah, good, mate, good. And Schwinn, how are you going, mate?
Doing well, thank you.
That's all right. And we haven't got Carl with us today. He couldn't make it, so what a shame that was, because we were actually going to discuss Willock. But anyway, sorry, Carl. have you back next week. Just before we get started, I just want to touch quickly on the panel we have here, and I just like to say, I like to try and think we're a pretty unbiased panel. We have Tony, who goes to just about every Arsenal game, a member of our member as well. Tony, I understand.
Yeah. If there's something Arsenal can sign me up to, I pretty much do it.
Yep. And Schwinn, you're our man from America.
True, yeah. I mean, I'm not closely associated with Arsenal in any way, except for the fact that they live in my heart. But I try to keep it as real as possible. I understand there's, you know, a bias coming from me, and I'm happy to acknowledge that. But, yeah, I'm also happy to interact with people and talk to them about what they feel.
Exactly right. And that's what we're all here for. And, Savvy, you're from India?
Yeah, definitely India, and I try to be as unbiased as possible. But whenever I see something which has to be said, I put my point across. That's all. Some people like that, some people don't. But there is no biased opinion from my side.
And my name's Tez, and I'm from Australia, and I'm as unbiased as I come. I better be careful. No, but seriously, we have a muck around, Jay, and I better just make mention, Carl's not here with us, but he's also from the UK. And basically what I'm just trying to, just to show the listeners, guys, that we're from all different parts of the world, and it's amazing how sometimes when all of us people come from different parts of the world, how close our opinions can be, considering we all have different views of the game. Each of us are watching the game with different commentators, different analysis and everything, and still we somehow almost manage to come to the same agreement with some players. But anyway, that's enough of that. And that was just to introduce us to you guys, because you might have just tuned in this week on iTunes and you might not really know who we all are. So, okay, Tony, let's touch on the FC Cologne game, mate.
Yeah, it was... I mean, we didn't look very sharp. I mean, the commentators here, I didn't go because we was already through. I didn't want to waste money travelling to Germany for pretty much a dead rubber. But, I mean, the commentators here had it right. We looked pretty much in control without really looking dangerous. They got their goal from a penalty, and as you said, I try and be as unbiased as possible. And I've seen some people say that they thought it was a penalty. For me, never in a million years is that a penalty. I don't want to be one of them people that say, if you ever played the game. But if you've ever played, I knew he was going to go down before he did, before he went down. Mm. As soon as the two players were coming across, I was like, I said dive. Like, I knew what was going to happen. And it annoys me that the refs don't know that's going to happen. So for me, it wasn't a foul. But as I said, everyone's got their opinion. Now I have seen some different opinions. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I don't really care. We've won the group. I've said the whole way through the group since before the tournament started, if we can get through with playing a team that isn't going to play on the next game, it kind of it gives us the same situation as Chelsea had last year when they're only playing once a week. Yes, Arsenal are playing twice a week, but not them players. Sanchez isn't playing twice a week. Koscielny isn't playing twice a week, and so on and so forth. Mm. So for me, it's job done. The game was poor. A couple of things that I kind of sound like a broken record for anyone that listens often, but I still have some people say, "Oh, Giroud just doesn't have the same impact when he starts." I disagree with that. He doesn't have the same impact when it's a game that he feels is beneath him, and it's been a problem he's had for a few years. Anytime he plays in quote unquote a second string game, he's literally just not there. Like, he's so ineffective. It's like he's not interested. He does it often, and it's annoying because I personally think he could break into our first team, but it's an audition, them games. So you've got to show that you're good enough to take Lacazette's place or take Sanchez's place, but he doesn't do that. He goes the other way and sulks. It was good to have Welbeck back. I was just sitting there thinking this morning, we got offered 10 million very real English pounds for Elneny in the summer.
Well, yeah.
Why is he still at Arsenal? Like, just, he offers nothing, and it's nothing against him, but the type of player he is just offers nothing. He runs up and down like a headless chicken, but he has got a good engine, but he runs for the wrong reasons. His pass completion stats are probably very high, but they're just to no one. And he's not even playing it back or sideways because he's under pressure. He just does it out of force of habit. So literally, he just gets me. And I know, obviously, you introducing us at the start was in response to some of the comments we've had about Elneny. But look, I want everyone to succeed for Arsenal. I couldn't care if Donald Trump signed for Arsenal. If he scored 50 goals a season, I'd support him. But you've got to call it how you see it. The guy, Elneny, yeah. Look, he's not the only one, and I'm not picking on him, but he's the one that the comments have been about. He's just not good enough to play for Arsenal. It's literally as simple as that.
There's a couple of comments that come under that tweet, and there was a couple of interesting comments, and I'll get to you other guys in a minute. Someone said one of the worst Arsenal players without a date. His passes are always safe. There's no risk in his game, and he always plays the ball backwards. I think he doesn't believe he belongs there, was another one. I think he'll not be a starter in most teams in the English Premier League. So what's your take on it? Like, it's a hard one. Like, would he? I think he would get a start for another Premier League team.
It's difficult because what job does he actually do? If you're being well and truly honest, say he went to, I mean, it was Leicester that was a £10 million bid. If he goes to Leicester, I'm assuming it would have been a replacement for Danny Drinkwater, who ended up going anyway. But what job does he take? He gets the ball off the centre-back and gives it back to the other centre-back. He's not creative. Like, what? He's not a holding midfielder. He doesn't break up play. If he was excellent at breaking up play and then gave the ball 5 yards to a technically better footballer, there's no complaints about that. There's some very good players that do that. But he doesn't. He's not brilliant at breaking up play. His passing is just for the sake of it. There's no incisiveness. There's no danger. I don't understand what role he fulfills. And I mean, look, people will come and defend him and say, "Yeah, but he does this. He does have a good engine. He does have a very good engine." But like we say, Ramsey's got a good engine, and Ramsey gets forward and scores goals, and then he has one goal for us. His engine isn't doing him brilliant because he's not getting in the box on the end of moves. He's not brilliant at breaking up play on the edge of our box. So he's literally fit for the sake of being fit, not for any particular use.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall when they scouted him. Was he a scouted player or was he one of these, the computer?
He was at DNA.
Ah, okay. Right, okay. No. All right. Okay, well, any other bad performers?
Look, I mean, you can go through it. I didn't think any of the back five were particularly bad. I thought Maitland-Niles actually done really well until he had to try and pass the ball to someone in a blue shirt. And then in his delivery and his final ball was awful. But getting up and down the wing, it was probably one of his best performances in that aspect. He was never troubled defensively and he got forward really well and took on their fullback or wingback. Coughlin was Coughlin. He's okay in games when he doesn't have to have the ball. He looked okay when he came on against Tottenham. He was one of our better players against Man City. Both of them games, especially at the time he came on against Tottenham, we didn't have the ball too much. And that's when he's at his best against teams where we're going to dominate possession. He's literally a waste of time. I thought Welbeck looked bright. I don't know if he went off injured or they only planned to have 45 minutes for him. I've not read any reports on that.
I did read that they were looking at it was a planned move, and that come from John Cross, I think it was.
Wenger.
As well.
No, I think Wenger came out.
Oh, Wenger said it, did he? Okay. I just seen it on a tweet as well. So.
I thought he looked bright. Iwobi was, I mean, obviously came on at half time. I thought he had, I don't want to say a game or two off because he only played one half, but he looked really good sort of driving with the ball and pushing us forward. But again, as always with him, his final ball and his decision making and his passing was not very good. Mm. I thought Jack was very quiet. I still thought he was the most likely to create anything. But I think with them having sort of eight men behind the ball most of the time and Jack looking for them little cute 2 to 5 yard passes, it was very difficult for him, and he probably could have made some better decisions. And yeah, I think the back five, as I said, I don't think they're really challenged. I don't think it's a penalty. Debushi got booked, and it was a booking, but he had to do it. It's a clever booking. But yeah, apart from that, I thought Chambers looked good. I would have played Debushi right, Chambers central, but...
That was a question that I'll probably come back to you a bit later, because it was a question on Chambers that one of our followers ask.
I don't think, as I said, I think Coughlin and Elneny were poor. I don't think no one was good. Not one player was good, but I don't think anyone else you could label as bad. Mm. Potentially Giroud, but that was just a lack of interest.
Mm. Okay. So just on Giroud, though, where's he going now? What happens? Is he looking out to get it in January, or he wants to stay on?
We won't sell him in January because we don't have a cover for that type of player. Well, I'd be surprised if we sold him in January. Mm. Especially with Welbeck's fitness record. But Giroud's got to buck his ideas up. It's all well and good playing well when you come on in the league or if you get a start in the league, but you've got to earn that start. When there's a new £50 million man come in, you have to show that you deserve to be in that team, either instead of him or alongside of him. At the moment, Giroud is not doing that. If you look at the games he's played, he obviously scored a penalty against Barthez, scored a very good goal against Red Star away, but he wasn't good in either of them games. Mm. In the Europa League home games, he hasn't been good. In the Carabao Cup against Norwich and Doncaster, he wasn't good. So it's like he's got to win his place, not just it's like a sense of entitlement where he thinks, well, it was my role last year and I've just got to show up to get that back, and it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Another reason we won't sell him in January, I don't think, is because I'd assume, I mean, we're going to come onto it, but if one or both of Ozil and Sanchez go, it could be a chance that we're forced to play two up top, or we have that one man less cover, because if, for example, Sanchez goes, as I said, we'll get onto this later, then say Iwobi comes in, but it's one more less cover that we've got, so Giroud becomes more important by association.
Okay. Right, well, let's continue on the FC Cologne game. Savvy, you did up the ratings, and... I seen one of the comments on, mate. I think you give Elneny a 5, and one of the our followers said 2.
yeah, it was Glenn. Yeah,
it was very hard, though, wasn't it? Like, you criticise a player, and you know, you can't win either way, mate. So, but 5 was probably what you saw in it, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I gave Elneny a 5, and it is the worst together with Olivier Giroud. So the worst ratings on my ratings were 5, so that was what Elneny got.
Mm.
I think Maitland-Niles was good in the game. As Tony said, he was very good in going up and down. He was running, and sometimes you could see he was everywhere. He was a good out ball on the left side. Then Elneny, we have all touched on that. I think he was very, very poor. And I think even his positioning, I don't know how he positions himself. Sometimes he's bombing forward. Sometimes he's never shielding that back three. But sometimes he's always somewhere in the middle, just sitting there or just standing over there looking for an easy pass. So it was a very poor game by him. Coughlin, we all know he was very shaky when he got the ball. We all know that he's not good when he has the ball. But sometimes he broke the play well, and I think he went close to scoring in the first half. And he was the best attacking player for us in the first half, because we were very poor in the first half. Actually, we were poor for the whole game, but attacking-wise, we didn't do anything in the first half. I think the centre backs holding Mertesacker, Debuchy, they had a good game. On penalty, actually, I thought it was a penalty, not because of Debuchy's foul, but I think he played it very clever and went down. And if I was the referee, I would have given it. So I thought it was a penalty. And I think that was the only real chance. I think Nelson, when he came on, he looked bright. And he almost scored for us. And then Chambers was good defensively. Offensively, I thought he could have done better. I think Jack showed some flashes, but just couldn't create anything. Iwobi, I think he came on and ran a lot, pushed us forward, and actually looked bright. But yeah, he was wasteful in possession. But yeah, rest, I think subs, I think Eddie came on. He looked okay. He came close to scoring. Then, yeah, it was, but it was a very poor performance. We could do a lot better, but on the bright side, we topped the group, and that's what we hoped for. So, kudos to the players. We topped the group. That's what we wanted. Let's see how it goes in the knockout stages.
Okay. Schwinn, there was a lot of criticism on the players. Basically, the whole team got criticised for losing a game against a team who's coming last in the Bundesliga, and actually, funny enough, a couple of the critics actually said Wenger got it right. What was your take on it all, mate?
Well, I mean, just to sort of think about where we were before this game, just to put things in perspective, I think it would do us well to just remember that these two games, these two last games, excuse me, for the group, are not that consequential. So I was happy to see a revised lineup for one. Because when we have these games and when the win is not essential, then it's good to try out certain other players in certain other positions. So I don't mind an improvised lineup if, you know, if the coaching staff thinks that there's something that we might want to test out so that, you know, it helps us in the future, whether it's in the Europa League or, you know, at other domestic cups that we might be a part of.
Mm.
So I don't mind the lineup. I'm not going to touch upon every player because I think Tony and Savvy already did that pretty well. My only complaint, of course, is with Elneny. And this has nothing to do with Elneny himself. only because, I mean, I understand what he brings to the table. I understand where he's lacking. And every player has that. However, I think when we bought him, which, as Tony said, was a Stats DNA purchase, we were playing a different system. You know, we used to have three people in midfield. Whether you see that as a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, whatever you might have, but we had three players in midfield. Ever since we've switched to this new system, we have almost asked our two midfielders to take upon the duties of those three midfielders. So there's a lot that is being asked of these players, and rightly so. When you're playing for Arsenal Football Club, you know, you have to be challenged. But Coquelin and Elneny will never fulfill those two positions. I mean, Xhaka and Ramsey are having a tough time trying to accommodate themselves to that position, you know, without having that central center attacking mid who's going to be able to, you know, provide a little more pressure from the top and sometimes be that extra body midfield. So when we criticize players, it's what we see, it's how we see them. It has nothing to do with who they are or, you know, with a bad game or here or there. It's a pattern that we see, and it's a pattern that we're then, you know, putting out for other people to think about. So, I mean, there's no excuse for the set pieces that he was delivering. I think every one of his corner kicks was cleared of the near post. I think Jack suffered from that too, from when he was taking corners from the other side. Our final ball just was absconding completely. We couldn't make anything work. We had one chance maybe when Nelson came on late and he dribbled past a few players, but he took an impromptu shot, which was right at Timo Horn. So, I mean, this is a consequence of trying out something new. I think Nelson was sick, sort of, coming into the day. So that's why maybe he didn't start. But he was bright off the bench. Iwobi, as Tony said, was also willing to take the defenders on. So, I mean, some bright sparks here and there. Of course, the result didn't go the way we wanted it to. But at the same time, it wasn't that important. So I think we can give the players a pass. Cologne really tried. They're suffering in the Bundesliga. So this is one of their places where they can, you know, sort of go ahead and try and challenge for the knockout stages from on here. And their final game day clash against Bate, I think. Is it Bate or is it Red Star? I forget. But their final game is going to decide their fate, whether they go ahead or not. So good for them, boys. Good for Lukas Podolski, who was watching the game and tweeting about it as the game was going on. He seemed pretty kicked about Cologne winning. So good for him and good for all the Cologne fans.
And you can find us at @clock_talk if you disagree with any of the guys. Because at the end of the day, anybody who watched that performance and can say to me that Elneny had a good game, I'm sorry, but you don't watch much football, or you looked at some stats, because he was not good. I didn't watch the game live because it was on here at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. And I did the mistake of looking at Twitter, and I seen everybody criticising it, and I thought, oh great. And I think I even said to you guys, Elneny's having another great game, I see. And anyway, so I watched the game later in the morning, and I had to agree. I tried to look for a positive, and I could not find a positive. I don't know what to do with him. I really don't. I think we're mad not to get the $10 million in the summer off Leicester, if that was the case. So, where do we play next in that group?
We've got Barté at home, and just to Schwinn, it's Red Star against Cologne, which is the winner goes through. We've got Barté, who are dead and buried.
Okay, yeah, that's right, okay. Right, as onwards and upwards, we're already through, boys. So at the end of the day, we type a turn a negative into a positive, so... Now, where to? Burnley coming up. Let's get straight into that one. Tony.
Yeah, it's a tough game. Burnley are better than half decent. Look, they're level on with us on points at the moment. That is slightly a false position, but they make it difficult for you. Even in, I think I've been there 3 years with Arsenal, and we've won all 3-1-0. And every game's been horrible and hard. Even in the years they've got relegated, they never get blown away 5-0. Dyche has his team very tight at the back. It's a small ground. There's not much width to work with. It's always cold. It's just not a nice day. I know some people are looking at it and thinking, "Oh, Burnley, we should beat them." But they drew away at Tottenham. They won away at Chelsea. They drew away at Liverpool. They've got some points against the big sides this year. And Dyche's teams are always hard to play. I mean, I don't know if any of you remember last year, we scored in the 93rd minute of a 92-minute game with a goal that was both handball and offside. I mean, look, you look at the result a year later and we won it 1-0, but the game was horrible. Nothing happened. There was no chances in the game. And that's what they want. If they can get that, they'll go for that. Like, a point against us is a good result for them, and they're very good at the back. So their prerogative is going to be defending. So it is going to be a hard, horrible game.
Yeah, they've won their last three in a row by the looks of it. Newcastle United, Southampton, Swansea. So it's not going to be an easy game. Everton, they drew against West Ham. Yeah, so, you know, and they're playing really good football. He's a good manager.
He's a very good manager.
He's a good manager. Yeah. Savvy, what's your take on it, mate? What are you expecting?
Yeah, I agree. It will be a very difficult game because Burnley are in very good form and they are very well drilled. Defensively, I think they are very, very good. And we know Sean Dyche. I think he picks his team very well. They are defensively always sound. Then they keep the ball well and there are not many silly mistakes associated with their play. So we have to be very clever to take the 3 points and that too away. They are very good at home and they have got some very good players. So I think it will be a very difficult game and I'm expecting a similar lineup to what we had against Spurs. The quality is there in that lineup, but definitely we'll have to be at the same levels we were against Spurs. Then only we are going to get the 3 points. Otherwise, it could be a very difficult afternoon.
Yeah, Wenger's come out and said there's no injuries. Everyone looks all right after the Spurs game, so I dare say it'll be pretty much the same team as that.
Yeah.
What's your take, Schwinn?
Yeah, kryptonite, aren't they? I mean, they do things really well that we are horrible at, and things that we excel at might not be their forte. So it's going to be a game of two completely different teams. As the boys spoke about, they've been in good form. They've shown their, you know, they've shown their team unity against some of the top teams as well. So there's precedent to, you know, Burnley playing bigger clubs, whether it be at home or away. What I think is going to be something in our favor is the fact that, A, we're not playing at home. So when that happens, I think Burnley is going to sort of maybe revise their tactics a bit. You know, maybe they do want to go for the win. Maybe they do see us as one of the bigger teams that they can get the better of. So I suspect it's not going to be all parking of the bus. I can see how they will be a little more inclined to attack and, you know, get on our backs if we do lose the ball in their half. So I think we can expect a little more optimistic Burnley. I don't think it's going to be all defensive from their end. And I also think that at some point that's going to go in our favor, because if they're trying to exploit our weaknesses and we are able to make sure that we are more clinical in their half and that we don't give the ball away in a stupid manner or in a bad position, then we can capitalize on this. I'm being more optimistic than pragmatic. I understand that. But I think the wave of result we just had, I mean, just the last result we had, in fact, has really put the motion in our favor. And I think that players realize that the next two games, Burnley and Huddersfield, are quote-unquote easy games. Even though Burnley are seventh in position, but we have way more quality than them. They're a better team, some might argue, but individually, I think we have more quality, you know, when you look at us on paper. So I expect 3 points. I know it's going to be a tough 3 points, but I don't see any reason for us to be skeptic going into the game.
And you're talking about positive with the team and whatnot after the Spurs game. Did you happen to catch Shaka? When he came out and said, City are only 12 points in front of us, we can catch them. So, and a lot of people laughed at that. But I like that positive. I like that positivity in the players. I think, well, good on you, lads, you know. You're not throwing the towel in and you're not going, oh, fuck it, we're not going to win nothing. We might as well fucking play like busted arses.
Of course, I mean, as long as it's mathematically possible. Of course we are in it. I mean, yeah. Who's not in it? I would argue Everton are in it. Of course, the chances of them actually finishing top are almost nil, but they're still in it, you know, in terms of reality, they could still make it. And, I mean, let's not forget that we're just, what, 12 games into the season? I mean, there's a long way to go. 13 games into the season, there's a long way to go. And December and January are brutal. I mean, those 2 months can change the whole dynamic of where we'll be going towards the tail end of the season. So, I mean, I don't think City are going to go unbeaten. It's a very, very tough league. As good as they are going to drop points at some point or the other. They might suffer from a few injuries to some key players. I mean, without someone like Fernandinho, that squad is in deep trouble. And now we've seen John Stones limp off in their previous game. So, I mean, there's a lot at play here. And if he had come out or if someone else had come out and said that we're not in it, I'd be shocked. There might be people feeling that way, and which is normal considering the table. But you can't openly say that because at that point you're writing yourself off, which is the one mistake you never want to make.
So in this podcast so far, we've been recording for 28 minutes. We've ridden off Elneny and we've just talked up Shaka. Well, here comes the hype. Anyway,
we ask for it, don't we?
Oh, we do. Okay, I want to move on to something that it may be a little bit late news now, but we will touch on it. Adam Crofton, he UK from the Daily Mail, they put out a mock 11 team. You know, they all do it, and he basically put out a Spurs team, from what I understand. And basically, after the win, Arsenal decided to reply with a cheeky little gif of Ozil drinking tea. The guy got a lot of hate from it from Arsenal fans, and Well, let's get everybody's opinion here, Tony.
I mean, the guy got obviously exposed to an audience of 12 million people. He knew what he was doing. Look, he created an article to generate clicks and then essentially moaned when it got too many clicks. He says, he's trying to now play the innocent card and said, I put the team as I saw it. But I actually read into it after the game. I actually looked at the team he'd picked. And he put, it was all Tottenham. And there was, I think it was Dele Alli, I'm not sure. But there was one player and he said, oh, well, I think Sanchez is better than them. But based on form so far this season, I can't, which I've picked this team on, I can't put Sanchez in. Mm. Fair enough. His left back was Danny Rose. Played one game this season, maybe two. So, he done whatever he could to try and wind Arsenal up. What the journalists are moaning about, because a lot of them seem to have collected together in defending him, regardless of what paper they write for. They're saying Arsenal exposed him to this many people and they were all giving him abuse. He claimed homophobic, racist abuse.
Mm.
I have seen one tweet. Look, one is still too much, but from I know a lot of people that were looking for these tweets that he was claiming to have received about, obviously, the racist and the homophobic abuse. And literally one tweet has been found. So it's like, you wasn't, from what's been found, you wasn't subject to abuse, apart from abuse of what the team you selected. But you're more than happy to abuse a player if they have a bad game. So why can't it be the other way? And then the other journalists started piping up saying, oh, but the audience is so big. And it's like, okay, so you're allowed to criticise people with more followers than you, but if they have less, it's not allowed. So the Daily Mail can say a negative about Ozil, but maybe not about Reece Nelson. Is that what they're saying in future? Because they have more followers than Reece Nelson. Like, it literally makes no sense what they were saying. A few journalists, mainly not newspaper journalists, ironically, but a few, Gary Neville, Gary Lineker, were sort of on Arsenal's side saying, look, you've given them abuse. They've won and sort of said, not really abused, but they've said, oh, yeah, we saw you. We saw what you were trying to do. And then you've got to come back from that. You can't. No one's going to write a newspaper article and then get all positive feedback. And he's literally moaning because he had more negative feedback than usual because Arsenal exposed his tweet. But look, as a journalist, if you have an article and it gets viewed by 1 million, 2 million people, believe me, his boss. I actually don't think he was that upset about what happened. I think his newspaper publication were telling him to keep it going because the amount of clicks it was getting must be crazy. And you know when they present their audience figures to their advertisers, whenever, if they do it quarterly, monthly, they're going to go, oh, look how popular we were this month. We got however many million views and the majority of them, that'll be their most viewed article this month. So I find it very hard to believe that he was actually that upset or that distraught about what went on.
Okay. Schwinn, what's your take on it, mate?
Well, a couple of things. Let me start off by saying that I'm actually sipping a cup of tea as we talk about this. That's pretty funny. But the more important thing here is that any sort of abuse, right, whether it's anti-Semitic, homophobic, any sort of racist or ethnic-based discrimination has no place in this world. So I feel sorry for Adam, whatever he was subjected to. As Tony said, even if it's just the one, it's too many. I've heard that there were 7 or 8, at least on Twitter. He's made his profile private now, so there's no way we can, you know, access those tweets unless he approves you as a follower. But I also believe there was a lot more abuse on the Daily Mail website. So let's unpack this a little bit. First of all, no disrespect to anyone who reads the Daily Mail, but we know, and this is public knowledge, that the Daily Mail is a questionable publication, and sometimes there are things on there which a lot of people find obscene and abusive in general. So the very fact that this is being attributed to Arsenal Football Club is ludicrous. You know, I mean, when you write for a publication like that, there might be your own following, the publication's following, that might lash out in a way that is considered abusive. I'm not standing up for people who have, you know, said these things. It's completely aberrant. But you have to realize why this abuse might be coming from, and more importantly, from where it might be coming from if you're accusing a brand that has a 12 million following. So I think to connect those two things, I think, is the biggest mistake that Adam made. Now, you know, you can only clap with one hand. You cannot clap with one hand. So we have to also see what mistakes Arsenal Football Club could have potentially made in this interaction. I think a more veiled tweet, instead of Arsenal replying directly to Adam, and then people, Arsenal followers, looking at why Arsenal are replying and then engaging with Adam, might have not been the wisest move. If Arsenal had just put out a tweet not replying to someone, but sort of disguised it as, you know what, we know what you guys were talking about. We know that you guys were doing these combined 11s and this and that. I'm sure there was a better way of doing that. I think we would have, you know, stayed away from this whole episode. But that being said, it was banter. It was playful. It was not by any means provoking. There was no aggression that Arsenal were perpetuating. I think it's very, very unfair for someone to accuse anyone, an entity, an individual, a company, a football club, of promoting this. I think there is absolutely no wrongdoing on our part. Again, I feel sorry for Adam, but if you take part in clickbait journalism, if you are, you know, putting out content out there that is meant to inflame people, then you will get some backlash. So I feel for the guy, but I think it's a lesson learned on both sides. And I don't think we should stop any sort of engagement between parties like this, but it's something that we should be careful about. And journalists should know that when they get into this sort of a relationship with a football club and this sort of interaction, then there will be instances where it might backlash in the most unforeseeable way.
So we're talking about Adam Crofton, sorry. And I just read his Twitter is actually opening again, and I was just having a little read of it. So read this. I picked a team, Arsenal won. I look a bit silly, congrats to Arsenal. But since they tweeted it, the 12 million people I've had all day harassment on here, including anti-Semitic, homophobic abuse, and people wishing me dead. I can handle it, but would not advise club repeats this. Look, it is. I agree with what you said, Schwinn. It's. I wish nobody death threats or homophobic. But Twitter is what Twitter's going to do, and it can either suck you up and spit you out, or you know, it can be kind to you. Unfortunately, the way I look at this though is Adam, he give it. Unfortunately, he's going to get it back. Especially if Arsenal won, which was the case. So I don't know. Like death threats, I do not condone them in any means, or homophobic or anti-Semitic posts or replies. But I haven't read what the replies were either. But if you're going to give it, you've got to learn to take it. And if that Spurs team was a shot at Arsenal fans, well, I don't think Arsenal are in the wrong here by little sneaky, cheeky gif, sucking a cup of tea and basically a sneaky way of saying, get that up, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, I mean, what the essence of this story is that any entity on Twitter should be responsible for its followers. And that is shocking. I mean, how can you do that? You know, I know that there's, you know, an option to be a private account on Twitter where you personally approve your followers. But, I mean, those are few and far between. Most of the Twitter accounts, especially, you know, for football clubs and bigger entities, are free. And people can just follow them. So if someone is saying something, and in this case, which is not explicitly asking for aggression or violence or any sort of, you know, backlash, how can you just assume and attribute that to Arsenal Football Club? You know, it's stupid. I mean, just yesterday, I think, or day before yesterday, when Sevilla beat Liverpool, when they drew with Liverpool, a lot of Liverpool fans were tweeting at Wissam Ben Yedder, and they used some fruitful and colorful language. And you should have seen what Ben Yedder did. He simply quoted a tweet, and he said, these English fans, and he was laughing about it. You know? I mean, that's what Twitter is all about. If you're signing up for Twitter thinking that, you know, you're going to be put on a pedestal, you're looking in the wrong place, my child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mostly abuse. Very, very few times will someone reply to you saying, oh, what a great tweet. Mm. Or, wow, never thought of it that way. People just scroll through.
And there's a lot of trolls about and whatnot, and they thrive on it. So, Savvy, I haven't asked you what your thoughts on it, mate, or have you got something to say on the subject?
Yeah, actually, I agree with most of what's been said, but actually, I've got a question for Adam. When you put a tweet out or a team out where you are picking 11 Tottenham Hotspur players, then what are you expecting Arsenal fans to do? I think even before Arsenal replied to him, there would have been backlashes and abuse. And I agree, death threats and homophobic on whatever he's saying, they are not right. But definitely, he would have expected it to come because he picked 11 Tottenham Hotspurs player. And what is he expecting from Arsenal fans? Obviously, we are going to slate him. There's going to be a backlash, and it was nothing dangerous or nothing malicious from Arsenal. It was just Ozil drinking a cup of tea, and then he's saying that they have 12 million followers, and this is not right. But it is not Arsenal Twitter's fault that they have 12 million followers. And when you are picking 11 Spurs players, and then you are saying you were ready for it, you can handle it, then just handle it. Why are you moaning about it? It was what was expected. And had Spurs won that game, he would have quoted that tweet and would have just said, "I was always right." So when we have won the game, definitely we are going to. Just say that we won the game and we are going to give it back to you. And that's what Arsenal Twitter did. And I actually stand by it.
Well, I'll give you a little example of what I know it's on a smaller scale, and I won't harp on about it too much. There's a bloke who called, and a lot of Manchester United fans, they were calling the... Who did they play? Basel or something in Champions League?
Yeah, Basel.
And they're calling them farmers. And I actually got a bit of a laugh. I got a bit of a laugh when they beat you 1-0. And I actually retweeted one of the guys' tweets, and I thought, you know, like the awkward moment when you tweet something out and it comes back to bite you. And that's exactly what's happened to Adam. It's come back to bite him clean on the ass.
And it's just funny. It was just banter. Arsenal being clever or savage, whatever you can say, but it was just funny.
Yeah.
Arsenal never meant anything wrong for him.
But he'd be happy because, in all due respect, I'll add a little bit of what Tony said. He's got a lot of hits.
Yeah.
And he's made a lot of money for that paper on that article. So congratulations to the Daily Mail and congratulations to Adam. Okay, let's keep rolling on because we've got a little bit more to get through before we finish up. Ozil to Barcelona. Has anybody got anything to add on that, Tony?
I mean, it's what the reports are saying, but Spanish newspapers tend to print whatever they want. It wouldn't surprise me. Iniesta's not getting any younger. Rakitic is a good player, but not a 10, so to speak. They've changed their shape slightly since Neymar's gone. Maybe that coincided with Dembele's injury, but we don't know because he only really played two games for them.
Yeah.
So previously, they never really had a number 10 in terms of role. Please don't at me and tell me Messi wears number 10. I know that. But previously, they didn't have a number 10 in terms of position. And under the new shape, they do have a need for that. So we all know he's a quality player. People can pretend he's not because they don't like him or don't like his perceived work rate or whatever. But let's not kid ourselves, he's a quality player. So it wouldn't surprise me if they looked at that. It would be very cut price. It would be 20 million at an absolute maximum. The only doubt that's in my mind about it is they can speak to him in January. Do they need him necessarily for between January and May? Probably not. I think they're about 10 points clear in their league. So they probably don't. So I don't know why they would even pay that 20 million for him when they can just speak to him in January and say, here's your offer for the summer. Apparently, there's been a stumbling block. Again, it's all paper rumours on that he wants 330 a week and they don't really want to stretch to that. But let me tell you, if they get him on a free, they will. So I think it looks like the only main concern is whether his Real Madrid links will stop him doing it. And no one knows that apart from him. There was another report from, again, another Spanish paper saying Messi didn't want him to come because he's known to disappear in big games. I don't believe that for a second, but I did enjoy it. Loads of retweets of Messi walking past the World Cup while Ozil was lifting it. I mean, it's difficult to tell. As I said, one of you guys asked me the other day, and my opinion was that Arsenal will accept the 20 million bid if it comes in, I believe. I believe Ozil will accept it as long as the money is in the ballpark he's looking at. So for me, it only remains on, is that offer forthcoming? Beyond that, I think Arsenal will accept it, and I think Ozil will accept it.
Percentage, you're just off the top of your head without knowing any knowledge, and we'll just disclaimer, Tony's not an agent for Arsenal or anything. So, top of your head, mate, what do you think? Percentage chance he'll go or not? Go or stay?
I think he's more likely to go than stay, but as I said, it all depends on the offer coming in. So, even if I was working for Arsenal, as some of the listeners know, I know a few people that do work at the club, but it's dependent on an offer coming from elsewhere. So unless I know someone that worked at Barcelona, which I don't, I can't give a fully accurate answer. But I believe if the bid comes in, he will go. So I would say it's more likely than not that he will leave.
Okay. Righto. Let's go to... And we'll go with Schwinn. Arsenal planning life without Wenger, mate. It seems like they're putting some new staff in place. We got a new guy turn up this week, and what have I done with his name?
Sven.
Sven, that's him. I was just looking for his name, yeah. So what's your thoughts on that, mate? You know much about him or heard much about
only
him?
Only from what we've read, from what articles have been making the rounds on Twitter. But, yeah, I mean, seems like Ivan Gazidis is finally getting to work. I mean, it's about time. He's been at the club 9 years. but it feels like that we are preparing for life after Wenger in terms of having a support system that is ready to usher in a new manager without him having to take over too much. I mean, there's talks of a director of football as well. They've sort of become mellow ever since we've signed Sven Mislintat, who is also known as Diamond Eye, according to German publications. He's been attributed with bringing in some top-quality players like Lewandowski, Aubameyang, Dembele, another one. Of course, Dembele was better known by the time Dortmund brought him in, but he was actively scouting Dembele. And his claim to fame signing was Shinji Kagawa, who Dortmund purchased for about 500,000 euros or something, and then ended up selling him to Manchester United for 15 million pounds, I believe it was. So he's clearly got a keen eye. I feel that as a scout, your distinguishing factor that makes you a great scout as opposed to just a good scout is whether when you watch a player and you decide correctly if that player can perform at a bigger stage. You know, when two teams are playing, it's easy to see who is standing out. But to sort of transpose that into a different setting without actually having the opportunity to see the player perform in that setting is, I think, what distinguishes a good scout from a great scout. So he has already, you know, shown that quality. He had a falling out with some of the Dortmund hierarchy, Tuchel in particular. But it feels like even though Tuchel has left, some of those, you know, things are still bothering him. So brilliant signing for one. Mm. Kudos to Arsenal Football Club for swooping in and you know, bringing him on board. I know there was a lot more interest in him from other major clubs. So I think we did a good job in you know, bringing him in. But we need to make sure that he gets the freedom to operate. You know, there's no point if he's traveling halfway across the world only to come back to Islington and be told that, you know, we're not interested. So he should have the freedom to operate, to bring in players, to negotiate with them, you know, a little more than what you would traditionally see from a scout at Arsenal Football Club. So I think we are paving the way for a future under Wenger. Sven is, of course, one of those signings. And I think we'll see a lot more activity on this front, particularly in the next 6 months.
In the background. And, yeah, your thoughts? This is his last contract?
Yeah, I mean, I said a couple of weeks ago, you know, when we were discussing the AGM, that I feel like his time is coming. I mean, his comments at the AGM, you know, suggesting that we're going to review my season at the end of this season.
Yeah, I thought that was odd, yeah.
Yeah, that was out of character. I mean, when he signed a contract for 2 years, I mean, of course you have an annual review. I mean, that goes without saying. But it was the tone, you know, it was the way he said it that makes me a little skeptic whether he's going to carry on. And then fast forward to the international break when he did an interview with BN in France, and you know, he was talking about how he might, you know, dabble with international football a little bit. It felt as if that he was considering options, which for Arsene is unheard of, you know? Like, it's a no before even someone knocks at his door.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to jump the wagon and say that he is gone. I think he's considering it, which is a first, I would say. Well, I think he also considered it late last season. I think in the FA Cup win sort of changed his mind. But I think he's getting up there. I mean, it's just too much pressure for him. And unfortunately, things don't seem to be moving the way he would like for them to.
Just a question without notice. Who would you like to replace him?
Oh, wow. That's a loaded question. I don't want to put any names out there.
Okay.
I don't particularly believe in bringing in a high-profile signing. I think that's bollocks. You don't need to bring in a Diego Simeone or a Carlo Ancelotti because that's what their names are.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, we did that with Arsene Wenger. He was a nobody. Arsene who, right?
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
But I think merit is what should be of utmost importance. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have talked about Eddie Howe. I'm not advocating for him, excuse me, but he should be in the discussion. Why not? You know, people who have performed and know the league or just know football, you know, at a good level, should be the one who takes up the mantle.
Okay, thank you. Savvy, what's your take on all that, mate? You think that?
Yeah, I think it is a very good appointment. Sven is the new head of recruitment, and we know he's got a great eye. He's well known for the players he has scouted. So yeah, I hope. I think there are many young players who came when he was there, like Christian Pulisic and Weigl, and many other great players. I think Socrates, many good players over there. Guerrero recently, and Aubameyang, Lewandowski, lots of players. So I think he could actually. Our scouting recently hasn't been that good, and this could be, I think, Gazidis keeping up with his word, which he said during the summer that the last season was a catalyst for change. So definitely he's keeping up with his word, and he's changing things. If not from the front, but definitely from behind the scenes. He's changing this talk of director of football.
And I think we've lost Savvy. Savvy's coming through to us on Skype, so I think he's just dropped out there. Tony, you still with us, mate?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything on this signing, mate?
Yeah, it's just it's just a kind of word of warning regarding him. Like, he has found some good players, but then everyone, like, the job he's taken is Steve Rowley's, who was Arsenal's chief scout.
Yep.
And everyone's delighted by this, and they think Rowley's gone stale and whatnot. But, I mean, the players, the unknowns, because he got Aubameyang, he got Dembele, but most of Europe knew about them, but Dortmund backed him stronger than Arsenal have ever, of the history of backing any of their scouts. So, I mean, he does have the name Diamond Eye, is his nickname in Germany. But I don't see them as Diamond Eye signings. I see them as he identified what many people did and Dortmund backed him. I tweeted out the other day that in a few years he'll be credited with the signing of Jordan Sancho when Sancho explodes, which I from what I've seen, I think he will do. Mm. But everyone knew about him. We tried to sign him. Dortmund just backed their scout better than ours did.
Yeah,
better than Arsenal did. So everyone seems delighted. Like, so yeah, sorry. If you go back to the signings that you could potentially say Lewandowski spotted, but everyone forgets that Lewandowski was due to go to Blackburn, but the ash cloud stopped his flight. Mm. So again, someone else had spotted him, and then you go from there. But he became a lot better. But then you go, well, that's the Dortmund's coaching team, not the scout. Mm-hmm. The scout may have seen that he had the ability to reach that level, but then so did the Blackburn scout. Is everyone trying to sign him? Does anyone even know his name? So for me, I go back to the last complete, not unknown, but the complete signing that no one else was really looking at. He got it and he made him a good player. And as Schwing correctly said, that was probably Kagawa. But then if you look at Steve Rowley, you go, Lauren Koscielny was a complete unknown. Olivier Giroud came off his best ever season, but I mean, no one else was really looking at him. I mean, you can name loads that have been through Arsenal. So yes, he has got a brilliant track record, and if the board back him, he could be very influential in bringing in some good signings. But I do think people are going over the top and getting too excited before anything's happened. Like, I've seen some people say, all of our transfer targets are now going to change, like, forget anything you've heard before. And it's like, well, no, because Wenger still knows the type of player and probably what players he wants. So just because the guy has, look, he'll come in with ideas. He'll come in and say, I've been and seen this guy. But if Wenger wants Lamar, it don't matter what the scout says. Sven could come in and say, he's awful. Wenger wants him, Wenger will go for it. So I think people are putting too much influence on Sven. As I said, he is just a scout. I mean, I tweeted this out the other day and someone started criticising me saying, oh, we always want change. And then when someone new comes on the board, you start moaning about it. One, I'm not moaning about it. Two, if you're going to criticise me, please know what you're talking about. He's not on the board. He's not a member of the board. He's a scout. And the one example I gave on Twitter the other day as a word of warning is Steve Walsh. So he was the master scout that is credited with kind of winning Leicester the Premier League. He went to Everton. This window, they spent, what, 143 million, was it? And Pickford maybe has lived up to the price tag. None of the others have. And when I tweeted that out, someone said, but Sven's found Aubameyang, Dembele. Leicester wasn't on that scale. I would argue per budget that Steve Walsh done a better job. They signed N'Golo Kante for less than 5 million. They sold him for 35. That's what, 7 times the fee. They signed Jamie Vardy for less than 1 million. They've rejected £25 million offers. That's 25 times the fee. Riyad Mahrez was £250,000. They were looking at 40 million for him. My maths isn't good enough to work out what percent, how many times the fee that is. Whereas, so Dembele, they signed for near 20, between 10 and 20, and sold for 120, which, don't get me wrong, is an amazing markup, but an absolute maximum. It's only 11 times. So per budget, I would argue Steve Walsh done a better job, and he's gone elsewhere, and it's not worked for him. So I'm not negative about it. I'm not saying it's going to be a bad appointment, and I hope it's brilliant, obviously, but I think people are getting far too excited with, at the moment, there's no, until he does something for Arsenal, I'm not excited by his signature.
And everybody's got to remember that he's got to be backed by the club.
Of course, there's no point him spotting this wonderful player, the next Messi, and Arsenal going, we'll give you £1,000 a week when someone else is offering £5,000 a week.
Mm.
As I said, the difference was Dortmund have always fully backed him. And someone touched on the reason he left was a disagreement with Tuchel, which is true. And he felt the club, it was the first time the club never backed him. They took Tuchel's side. And that's why, even though Tuchel's gone, he wanted out, because he felt for the first time the club haven't backed him. So if Arsenal don't back him to the level Dortmund did, then there's obviously going to be...
He won't be anywhere.
And he's also not going to do the job that many fans seem to expect him of. You've also got to remember, in the last 4 years, despite him having a diamond eye and finding all these players, the club, Dortmund, have made a lot of profit off of him, but haven't won anything. And the criticism a lot of Arsenal fans have is that we make the club a lot of money, but don't challenge for major honours. In the last 4 years, that is literally all Sven signings have a track of. They got, well, I mean, saying that, they didn't get a fee for Lewandowski, but they got him and they improved the side because of him. Aubameyang, they will get a big fee for at some point. Dembele, they already have. Pulisic, you'd imagine they will. But all he's done is got players that are worth not much, or worth an amount, and made the club a lot more, whilst not winning trophies. But surely that is our main complaint about the current state of Arsenal Football Club. Make loads of money, we don't challenge for the league.
Mm. No, it is, and you're dead right. You've hit the nail on the head there. Okay, let's get back.
I'm back. Yeah, sorry.
Savvy had a problem with his Skype. I did hear the bells dinging and whatnot coming back in. So, did you want to add some more onto that, Savvy?
No, yeah, I'm just on with what Tony said. I listened to it and I completely agree to that.
Yep, okay. Righto, so we're going to move on. We've got a couple of followers' questions, so I'll just rattle them off. We talked about Schwinn, Luke Lester. Schwinn, you touched on this, so we'll go to you. Wenger will go manage France at the World Cup in Dubai.
From Luke Lester. Are we having a World Cup in Dubai?
I don't know.
I think he meant...
Oh, that's what he meant. I thought he was talking about another World Cup in the future. God damn, I thought Wenger's going to still be around for 20 years.
I had to re-look at that and think, fucking, we're doing the right thing. Okay.
I mean, in all probability, if he does opt for international management, France would be, the number one choice. Deschamps did just sign an extension, I think, for quite a few years, if I'm not wrong. I think 2021, maybe 22 is what I read. I might be wrong, so please correct me if that's the case. But yes, I mean, France would be the standout option, and I'm sure they would happily welcome him. But, I mean, it's all speculation. You know, obviously, we don't know where this is going. I personally don't think he would. I think the day he stops being at Arsenal would be it for him. Having said that, I think he'll still be around for a while. I know we just talked about how he might be considering leaving, but he loves the club too much. He's also, and I hate saying this, but I think he's also a little egotistical in that way. I think that's been an advantage for quite a while, but we all know that can backfire, and there are recorded cases of where it has backfired. So I think the day he gives up Arsenal Football Club, he'll also sort of just give up management, because he knows what it takes. He might be tempted to look elsewhere, to consider some other opportunities, maybe even take up a different role at Arsenal or at some other football club. But I think people close to him, his brother, and his entourage, if you will probably not advocate for that. And considering his age, maybe thinking about his health from some years from now. I don't see it.
I personally think he'd probably take up maybe 1-2 years, maybe with PSG, because let's face it, managing PSG is a pretty cruisy job in the country that he loves as well. So, not a bad little retirement fund to boost the kiddie up. I know he loves Arsenal, and he'll never coach against Arsenal in the Premier League. But I could almost see PSG being an option, if not France, the national squad.
Yeah, but I can't see how. I mean, first of all, let's put it out there that PSG might not be the PSG we know today X years from now. You know, we don't know where Neymar is going to be. I mean, football changes every day. We don't know if Neymar is going to be there in the next 2 years. You know, no one can definitively say that. We don't know whether the PSG is going to be under close scrutiny for their dealings. Al-Khalifi's name was brought up in a hearing a few days ago in New York related to some sort of, you know, malpractices with FIFA. So, we don't know where this is going. Mm. And I personally think, although as much as Wenger wants to get his hands on that elusive Champions League, I don't think for him it will be that appealing that he's going to go looking for it elsewhere. I think more than anything, he wants to do it for Arsenal. This might be a little more romantic than what people, you know, would expect. But I think his heart beats Arsenal. I mean, that's one thing we can say without a doubt. People can question his tactics, his strategy, this and that, but no one can question his loyalty. And I think that's what defines him. If he lets go of that quality, and I would have nothing against him if he does, but I think it would be a huge impediment to his own understanding of his own self. And I know I'm going on a tangent here, but I don't think he'll do that. I don't think
I wouldn't mind if he did, to be honest. I think it'd be really good to see him go to a PSG and succeed, even if it's for 1 year. And just to, let's face it, he got plenty of money, so he's going to be paid well. And he goes there and wins a couple of trophies with him. If he wins a Champions League trophy, so be it. But that's probably one team that I could see me watching him elsewhere. Any other teams, I probably would shake my head and go, why? But being in his hometown or his home country and that, I think, well, it's over for me. It's PSG or France International.
I mean, the way I look at it is that if that is the case, if he does that with PSG, not with France, but if he does that with another club, I would feel very, very happy for him. But it would just sink me into a cocoon when I start thinking about what could have been at Arsenal. You know, because it's going to be such a double-edged sword.
Mate, he's had 21 years to do what he wanted to do at Arsenal. Like, come on.
No, but think about it, right? I mean, considering the financial wealth that PSG has, to your point, that he's going to have all the money to put a team in place that he would want to, and get rid of those shackles that have been on him for the last 10 years at Arsenal.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the criticism, but I'm just saying that if he was given the opportunity to go all out in terms of purchases, and of course there is arguments against this argument, I understand that. But I'm just telling you that psychologically, I'm going to be in a tough place personally to see him win and be ecstatic for him. But just wonder that if he had 100% control over players and ins and outs, which he does have to a quite a large extent, but maybe not 100%, then maybe things would have been a little rosier in North London for us.
Well, let's just hypothetically, we've got to move on quickly, but let's say he goes to PSG for 2 years, and I'm really hypothetically, he wins the league 2 years in a row and takes two Champions Leagues at PSG. Does he then become, he is the greatest manager of all time? Or and does he say that? Does people look back at Arsenal and say, "Shit, you've had the best manager of all time at Arsenal, but you didn't let him have the free reign of player spending and different things as what PSG did"?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be lots of stories about that, lots of hypotheticals that will be brought up. But I think everyone understands what the real part is, like what shackles Wenger actually has on him, the financial, austerity and this and that. So, I mean, the best manager of all time, I don't think he'll get that title. I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson, Brian Clough, even
one of
Arsenal
the best
fans,
he can get, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even amongst Arsenal fans, you find Arsenal fans arguing whether Herbert Chapman is more important than Arsene Wenger, George Graham, better than Arsene Wenger. So, I mean, even, within Arsenal, there's an argument.
Look, Wenger's, he's a fair way down the list of best of, but I'm just saying, if you go from one club, there's not many managers that can go from one club And you know, first two seasons, bang, bang, and that's all I'm getting at is what if, which is a big what if too. Like, it might never even happen. So it's all hot.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, it's a tough one, as you said.
Okay, Savvy, I got one here for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glenn says, can we pay someone to take El Nenny after last night's game?
Yeah, actually, as we discussed, I would actually give someone money to take El Nenny off. But as a squad player, I think he's an okay player who's just sitting there, who doesn't really want first team football. And we discussed we were foolish to pass 10 million for him in summer, which we really should have accepted. And I don't think we'll be getting a similar offer in the future. So I would actually sell him, but only if actually I think Willock can do better than El Nenny. I know Carl won't agree, but definitely we should give Willock the chance and take El Nenny out of that second team, because he's been I think he's not good, as we have already said, he's not good enough for Arsenal. So yeah, I think give a youngster the chance or something, but really El Nenny doesn't work for me.
Okay, and just another quick question by Mr. Stan Kroenke himself. He's just wrote... I can't even say this bloke's name. we're linked to him anyway in the transfer. F-E-K-I-R.
Yeah, Nabil, I think Nabil Fakir or something.
Something like that, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Would you like him at Arsenal?
Yeah, I would have loved him at Arsenal. Actually, recently I've seen 2-3 Lyon games and he's been terrific. I think he's already scored 11 or 12 goals and he's a very good player. And I think he could be a very good replacement for either Alexis Sanchez or Mesut Ozil. He's a very, very good player. If you see him play, you just his work rate is very good. He's very creative. He can score goals. He runs a lot, and he plays for the team. So I think I would love him at Arsenal. And I think he would suit us. He's a French player. I think we have been linked with him in the past also. And I think Wenger is a big fan, if we believe those reports. So I think it would make sense to go for him. And I think he could be a very good addition to our squad. And I think he's very good friends with Lacazette. And they can form a formidable partnership up top. So I would love him at Arsenal. Okay. Let's see what happens.
You know how to pronounce that name, Tony?
Nabil Fakir.
Fakir, is it? Fakir, that makes sense. Okay.
Fakir,
okay. We already touched on this, Tony, but do you want to add any more? Sam Beale just says, odd that Chambers was wing-back and Debuchy CB.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange that a player coming back from injury is given the role that you need to run more. But then, on the other hand, he may feel that, while Debuchy still does have a bit to offer, his legs may have gone, so he might not be able to get up and down anymore. So, I mean, look, if we're thinking on last time we both saw them play for the club, it was over 2 years ago, and I think at that time it would have been Chambers centre-back and Debuchy at right wing-back. But obviously he sees them every day. He knows what Debuchy's got left in his legs. And if he doesn't think he can go up and down, then he's going to play in there. So it was a surprise, but I mean, it was a surprise based on what we saw 2 years ago, not on the team selected in the present time, really.
And Chambers, he's a future player of Arsenal. Obviously, he's re-signed a contract, so he's going to be here for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think Chambers could break into the team in the or be very close to in a three-man defence at three centre-backs. He never looked comfortable in a two, really. I guess his age could account for some sloppiness, but I think in a three, he's looked good every time he's played it. He looked quite good at Middlesbrough last year. So I would have liked to see Chambers play there, because I'm always a big advocate of play where you're going to break into the team. Mm. But obviously, with Nelson being ill as well, if Chambers would have played in the middle, we wouldn't have had a right wing back if Debussy isn't capable of that job. Because Nelson, someone touched on it earlier, wasn't fit to play the 90 minutes as he'd been sick. So I don't know if Chambers would have played in the middle, but with the players he had and who had travelled, and obviously with Nelson's situation, it was the only possible solution, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Vish, I see your comment, mate. When Coughlin was the best outlet in terms of Arsenal attack, then you know your team is shit. Well, we did touch on that a little bit. Klein defended dodgily, coupled with Arsenal's fielding. Many players returned from injury as well. Youngsters, we have to do better in the final third with better decision making. We all pretty much agree, kind of agree to that. I think. Anyway, you've been with us here at the Biased Clock End Talk, where we talk Elneny is shit and Xhaka is good. You can follow us at clockend_talk, and I take that. I'm just taking the piss, so don't fucking hammer me on fucking Twitter and Facebook either. At clockend_talk, you can see Savvy's ratings, clockend.blog. And we're on Facebook as well. Thanks, guys. We'll be back. When will we be back? Next week?
Yeah. We've got a midweekend. We've got Huddersfield on Wednesday UK time, so I don't know if you want to go off that.
Okay, we'll have a look. We'll have a look when our games are scheduled, and we'll work out when we come back. Probably be next week, because I'm doing. Okay, thanks, guys.
No worries.
Thank you.
Goodbye.